Welcome to Adjusted Reality Series, brought to you by the Foundation for Chiropractic Progress, where we learn from athletes, celebrities, influencers, and healthcare professionals about how to optimize health in a fun, relatable way. Join me, Dr. Sherry McAllister, as I speak to Adam Schaefer about fitness and the role it plays in optimizing your health. Now, Adam Schaefer hosts the number one fitness podcast in 100 countries, has 20 years of experience in entrepreneurship and leadership, 22 years of professional fitness and training experience, and has managed some of the most profitable health clubs in the country. He has sold millions of dollars of online fitness programs worldwide and is now sitting here with me to chat about fitness. Welcome, Adam. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you. That's a hell of an intro. I like that.
Well, you know, this is a really exciting way to get our listeners the motivation and sometimes the inspiration of how their life is working. Now, we know we're in some very interesting times right now, so it's really delightful to actually have you on board, someone who is passionate about what they do. And I want to just ask you a couple of things just at the get-go is, we know a lot of people might be listening to us and it's their first intro into the fitness journey, that they've been thinking about it, they're kind of on the fence, they're not really sure how to begin or what to do. Can you kind of recommend where they should start and a little bit about your journey?
Wow, you know, that's changed a lot for me, right? So when I first started as a personal trainer, I think the things that I was drawn to, or I was fascinated with, is like understanding calories and macronutrients and program design and biomechanics. And I mean, this stuff fascinated me. And as a trainer, when I started to coach clients, this was a lot of where you would focus. You'd get a client and then you would break all this stuff down. Much of this, I think, is to, I don't know, assert yourself as the authority, or to prove to them that you're knowledgeable and you know what you're talking about and that you can help them and you have the answers. But it took probably a good 6 or 7 years of my career of kind of going down this path before I really kind of woke up and reevaluated the way I was coaching and helping these people that are just getting started on their journey. And really, it happened after an interesting moment. I had just recently won a trophy for being, you know, the top trainer in our company at the time. And, you know, they used to give these accolades around, and it was mostly centered around sales. Let's be honest. It was, it wasn't like they went around and measured 5,000 trainers that worked for the company and said, oh, he's the best. You know, they don't have time to do that. So they measured it by, you know, how much personal training were we selling? And I was really good at sales. And I had won trophies like this. I just kind of had this moment where I was self-reflecting on my career up until that point. And, you know, I'm supposed to be one of the best. And when I really was being honest with myself, the percentage of people that I thought I was really helping, like the people that I gave them the tools, the answers, and what they needed to do, and then they went on to change their life or get in incredible shape and then maintain that for the rest of their life, was a really small percentage. I mean, like less than 20%. And I don't think a lot of fitness people talk about that, you know, most people fail. Yeah. Most people don't reach their goal, or even the ones that do reach their goal, most of them put all the weight back on.
For sure.
And I think the reason why this is, and my co-host, I think, would agree with me, is that a lot of this focus is all around these things, the macros, the biomechanics, like all the details of what you need to do to see these results. And the missing piece, I think, was the focus on mindset and behaviors. And where I had to really check myself is, I remember, like, I'd have somebody, like in the early years, that would, you'd have a little par cue or questionnaire that you ask them, like, oh, you know, what do you do for fitness right now? And, you know, every once in a while I'd get somebody that would say something like, oh, you know, my husband and I, we walk, you know, twice a day for a half hour, whatever. And I would scoff at that. That's not exercise, walking, you know, we walk all day long all the time. You're not exercising. That's not doing anything for you. What I realize today is that's not only is that terrible advice to say that to somebody like that, but it's actually exactly how I start people today. So I kind of do, you know, in sales, there's what's called the takeaway close, where you know, somebody wants something. Oh no, you don't need that. Just start with this. And it's a sales tactic. Well, when we're trying to encourage people to make changes in their life, in a sense, we're selling them, right? So I need to sell this person on the idea of changing their behaviors. And one of the mistakes that we make as trainers, especially early in our career, is, you know, we throw kind of the whole kitchen sink at them. And most people kind of want that even at first because they want their results as fast as possible and they think more is technically better. But over time, what I started to realize was implementing behavioral change into this person's life is far more important than me educating them on macronutrients, biomechanics, program design, things like that. So much of my focus started to shift around, okay, what is one little thing that I can get this person to do differently in the right direction towards their overall health that I could get them to change forever? Forget if it's going to get them the fastest results or the to that body that they're talking about that they want to get to. We're going to get there. Right now, I just need to implement behavioral change in this person's life. And so then guess what ends up happening? As a trainer, I start asking things like, oh, do you walk at all throughout the day? Or do you, no, you don't. Okay, well, let's start with a 10-minute walk after every time you eat. And instead of me talking about macros and all these other things as a trainer, I began having these types of conversations, trying to implement these little tiny habits into their life that once they implemented it and they started to get a little momentum, it was easy for them to maintain it for the rest of their life. And then we would build upon that. And so much of my suggestion to the person who's just getting started in their fitness journey looks so different than what it was before. Many times I'll recommend, like, if you've not been working out at all, ever really, or years have gone by since you've exercised, many times I'll recommend somebody only starting once or twice a week, 1 to 2 times a week. I don't want them going very intense. I want us to focus on just a couple things to get good at, practice the movements and the exercise, and again, building the habits. If you talk about nutrition, if I got somebody who has been eating terrible for a really long time, and by terrible, I mean have no clue what they're consuming macronutrient-wise or what foods they may be getting or not getting in their diet or poor choices. And instead of me radically changing their diet, and this is another thing that's totally different, even if someone was wanting to lose weight, I actually like to add to someone's diet before I ever take away. So if someone comes to me, let's say they're 50, 100 pounds overweight, I ask them, you know, I'd like you to track your food for 1 week. I don't want you to change anything. So if you get a craving for a Snickers bar and you would normally go grab it at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I want you to do it. And then I want you just to track it for me because I want to see these behaviors that you normally do. And I don't want to radically change any of them at first. And then normally what ends up happening is I see some major outliers, some examples, under consumption of fiber, under consumption of protein, excessive amounts of sugar. These are like the common, lots of processed foods. So I'll see something like that. And instead of me trying to educate them on all of that and change all those things, I'll pick one thing that I think will really help this person. So let's just say fiber, I'm talking about that right now. And that's a common one. And this person may have also talked to me about their digestion and their stool is off and they don't poop on a regular basis.
Sure.
And so this might be an area that I might start. And instead of radically changing their diet, I might just ask them to add a certain food and I'll pick a fibrous food. You know, I'll pick some spinach or berries and I'll say, all right, so our first nutrition goal is this. Don't change anything. The only thing I want you to do different is make sure every day we get a nice salad and we get a, you know, half a cup to a cup of berries. That's it. And then I make that a behavior in their life. And then I check back in with them and I go, what have you noticed with your stool and your digestion? And I help them make that connection of making those healthy food choices, how that starts to improve their health. Oh, well, you know, it's funny you say that, Adam. I've noticed the last couple of weeks, like I've been pooping on a more regular basis, or it doesn't hurt when I do that, or I don't feel as much bloat as I was feeling before. And I show them what we did. I said, listen, this is where you were fiber wise before. This is where you are now. This is why you feel this way. And this is why you make a choice to go after these foods because you want to feel better. And that is so different than how I would coach before, because most people come in with this superficial goal. I want to look a certain way, right? The scale weight, I just want to move it. And what I know is that, yeah, as a coach who's been doing this for a long time, I can give you all the answers to the test. I can motivate you and push you to get to your goal and show you that change that you're asking me. But what I realized over years was that those people would all, as soon as they were done training with me, they would all revert back to their old behaviors and bad habits. And I used to think that was okay when I was a young trainer, because I thought that was job security. Right. Oh, this is great. They're only healthy and in good shape when they're seeing me. And I know you can relate in the chiropractic field with this, right? I actually tell people this is a good way to tell the difference between a good chiropractor and a bad chiropractor. A bad chiropractor, in my opinion, is somebody who sees you, adjusts you, makes you feel good, and then says, I'll see you next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And that's all they do. They just adjust, make you feel better temporary, knowing that you're going to go back to the same behaviors and patterns every day, get back in that situation where you feel like shit again, and then they're going to readjust you. And now I got a lifelong customer forever, right?
Right.
But a great chiropractor will teach you the root cause of where this pain is coming from. Where's this chronic pain coming from? Why are your movement patterns wrong? I might adjust you to eliminate some of that temporarily, but then I'm going to give you homework and tools to start to work on, to start to address the root cause. Because my goal, I would think, as a chiropractor, is to not only alleviate some of that chronic pain you may be dealing with now, but also give you the tools to fix that for the rest of your life. This is a lot where training is for me today versus what it was when I first started. I was in the business of giving you the answers, being a motivational guy and pushing you to results, where it's this complete opposite approach where I'm doing very subtle little adjustments to your day, and I'm just trying to create new behaviors.
Well, Adam, you said something that I resonate on, which is the adjustment. And you and I are in the same camp, is that that's our psyche, is adjusting the person to get the results that we're hoping to get on a regular basis. We're not trying to just hit the goal and leave the mark. That's part of our understanding of how we move our client or patient forward. The other thing that I heard you say for those that are beginning this fitness journey is, it takes one step to make into the next step, into the next. But the beauty of someone like you that's really deep into the fitness is the evolution that you just talked about, is that you saw things really almost planar at the very beginning. And now you see the multi dimensions that comes with working with humans, is that we fluctuate and we have those bad days. We have those fabulous days. And I think as a trainer, when you start to help people change the way they look at things, then the things that they look at change. And those are those small, really important nuggets that you just gave us in that aspect. Now that you've talked about your evolution as a trainer and the fabulous success that you've already now had over the past 20 plus years, tell me a little bit about the biggest challenges that you see people face, and maybe a little bit about when they begin their fitness journey, how they prevent falling off into Never Never Land and not getting back on the bandwagon to the fitness journey, as I call it.
Well, I love that question, because you give me kind of an underhand pitch for why we started Mind Pump, right? So I think the hardest thing right now for people is all the noise. There's so much noise around what you should do. I mean, there's all kinds of people claiming to be experts. Now there's so much on social media, and there's all these examples of these great physiques and bodies, and this person's telling me to do this, that person's telling me to do this. That, I think, is the most challenging thing for somebody right now, is to disseminate all this information and distill it down to the most important things that they should be doing to really make impact or change in their life. And this is really what inspired us to do what we're doing. We saw the need for that. We're a couple of older guys in fitness. I don't think none of us are old, but we've been doing it for 2 decades, and we didn't grow up with iPhones in our hand. And so none of us are like tech savvy. None of us were social media people before. So I didn't have an Instagram. I didn't have a Facebook. I didn't have a Twitter. I didn't have a YouTube. I didn't have any of that stuff before this business.
Right.
We started it with the intention of changing that. Right. So like, if you look on my Instagram handle, in my bio, it says here to disrupt the fitness industry. And that was really what I saw when I started looking at this medium. And the way it happened for me was, you know, I was working inside of a gym in my own little bubble. And, you know, you started to hear this noise about Facebook and Instagram, and this is where everybody is moving, and you could build a big business off of this. And I wasn't really interested in it at first. And then it got louder and louder and louder, to the point where I had to pay attention. Okay, what's going on over here? I know I'm having success in my own little bubble over here, but is this really is what everyone's saying is? And I started searching. I started getting on Facebook. I started getting on YouTube. I started getting on Instagram and looking at the quote unquote experts or the people with millions of followers that were impacting the most amount of lives. And what I quickly saw was a lot of bad information, a lot of really bad information that thousands, millions of people were falling prey to. And some of them, I think some of the people that are giving this bad information are coming from a good place. So I don't want to come to where I'm just like hammering, everybody's bad, everyone's wrong, we're the right ones. I don't have a self-righteous attitude like that. I think there's a lot of young trainers that are providing information. Like if I was around at 22 and Instagram was the thing at 22 for me, and I was giving my information that I was learning as a trainer, I probably wouldn't know that it was really bad information. I would think it's good because this is what's from my books. This is what I've learned, and I'm presenting it. So I saw huge opportunity. I saw a huge opportunity for someone to enter that space in the social media space, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, podcasting, and present the message that it took me over a decade to learn. It took me a decade of being in the field, in the trenches, working with people to learn that even I didn't know what was right, you know, early on, and I've learned a lot more. And can I figure out how to navigate these mediums and present value to these people? And I believed I could. And so that's kind of really how I decided I was going to start a, you know, social media business. And I started with YouTube and Instagram. It was a good time in my life because I was now over 30. And one of the hurdles as a young trainer I used to have was people would say things like, oh, you're in your 20s. What do you know about being fat or having
a heart?
Right. You know, I mean, if you're a young entrepreneur in the health and fitness space, older, unhealthy people love to point that out right away. So I was like, okay, I'm 30. And I actually had gone through a time in my life where I was out of shape. So for me as a trainer who carried himself in really good shape most of his life, I'd fallen out of shape. I had a little career change for a couple of years and I was not doing fitness for a while, or at least I wasn't doing fitness full time. And I got out of shape. I got to 19% body fat. So for me, that was really high. And I was in my 30s. So I thought, okay, this is perfect. I'm in the worst shape of my life. I'm now 30 years old and I am going to get on these platforms and I'm going to show people what I think is the right approach towards getting in shape. And I want to get, and my goal was, and I announced it, right? I put it out there into the ether, even though there's probably about five people paying attention at the time. And I said, I'm going to take myself from the worst shape of my life. And I did a video and everything. And I shared my body fat test and I'm going to get in the best shape of my life. And I admitted at that time, I said, I've never been less than 8% body fat. That's the lowest I'd ever in my trainer career ever desired to go to or ever had the discipline to work to. So what I'm going to show you is I'm not only going to get in the best shape of my life, I'm also coming from the worst shape of my life. And I'm going to share that journey with you. And so that is how I turned my Instagram on, I turned YouTube on, and I began to share this journey. And it was, and I made a point to share things that I thought was very counterintuitive to what other people in our space were doing.
Sure.
And that is what really gained a lot of the traction for my initial Instagram page. And more and more people were listening. And that is what also motivated me to take it all the way to the competitive level. And so I gained myself, or I gained a following of people. I had established myself as an authority in the space. This then opened the door for my partnership with Doug, Sal, and Justin, and all of us coming together and saying, okay, and we're all very similar trainers, although very different people. And we all saw the same issue with social media. We saw a lot of bad information. And here the four of us wanted to present a better message. And could we do it with these young kids that were, you know, exploding and getting so popular on all these pages? And that is the birth of Mind Pump, was to really educate the average listener or average person on all the fitness knowledge that we have, and to distill it in a way that is digestible and entertaining.
Right.
So
absolutely.
We knew that we had to, you know, we are fighting with the entertainment side of like the looking sexy and the cool cars and the things that attract the average person to give them attention. So we had to fight fire with fire a little bit. Like, we couldn't just come out and be all facts and all science nerds and here's all the information. Like, nobody was going to tune in. So we had to kind of have this entertainment flavor to draw you in. And then we kind of rock you to sleep with the knowledge and experience that we have. And we do it in a way that doesn't come off cocky, arrogant, or, you know, some of the podcasts that I would listen to back then that I liked, that attracted me to them, were very nerdy, very science-based, right. Doctors interviewing other doctors, heavy terminology. I mean, I geeked out on that because I'm a fitness science nerd. But what I knew was that my best friend would never listen to that. My sure. sister would never listen to that. And we knew who we were going after. I wanted the average person, just like all my clients, you know, I wanted the average person. And when we looked at the space, we saw a lot of people speaking in an echo chamber, a lot of really, really smart people talking to other really smart people about how smart they are and how things should be. And they're all arguing over studies and whose modality is more right now. And then you had the entertainment side, which had no science base. And it was all about entertaining and flash in the pan and really no real good science. And we felt like there was this beautiful lane for us to kind of play in both. Can we be entertaining enough to capture these people's attention to come back and listen to us every day? Can we be smart enough to hang with the smartest of our peers that are out there, but then present it in a way that the average person can get something out of it and then and be entertained so they come back every day?
Adam, you know, you said a few things there that really resonated with me, and that is this: for the average audience, they do want to assimilate the science and they want to know how it fits into their life, but they have to start somewhere. And they resonated with you because you started out almost being vulnerable in your own right. At 30 years old, here I am. I'm not the place I really want to be. I'm going to share it with you, show you my vulnerability, that I'm going to walk this journey with you. And I think sometimes that famous quote that patients or clients don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, right?
That's one of my favorite quotes.
See, I knew we were meant to be on a podcast together because I've seen how you've made it fun, you've made it enjoyable, but you've also had this opportunity to really get the client to understand the importance of some of the science, but also the fun behind it, because everybody in this is there to try to be the best they can be, the highest quality information. And one of the keys as a doctor in chiropractic is, if I give all the information on the first day, I've overwhelmed them and they're underwhelmed to do anything because they're at a loss. It's like, I don't know, she gave me 7 pages of what an adjustment is all about and how my body alignment is all based on flexibility, mobility. I think I'm fragility now. So we get into this moment where we can't give them too much. We need to bring them back around. And your fitness journey has really helped people just feel comfortable in their own skin. That's step one.
You said something that I have to expand on, because I think it's such an important message to any fitness people that are potentially listening to this interview. And that's vulnerability. This was our secret weapon, right? Of being a bunch of older guys, mm-hmm. being guys that are in their north of their 40s, right? And having lived this life experience in the fitness space, in probably one of the most superficial, insecure spaces in the world. I fitness is littered with insecure people, including myself co-host. And we are very aware of that. That the thing, and here's how you test that theory for those that are listening right now. Almost everybody who decides to start on their fitness path, it is driven by an insecurity. I'm not good enough. I'm too fat. I'm too small. I'm too slow. It's driven that you are trying to change something about yourself that you are unhappy with. And so then you're pursuing this. And that's okay as a temporary motivation to get you started, but eventually you'll have to work through those insecurities or else they'll resurface later on in your life. And what'll end up happening is you'll just get stuck in this nasty loop. And, you know, the three of us trainers, Justin, Sal, and myself, we knew this about ourselves. Each of us had different insecurities that drove us into the gym. And when we looked at the landscape of Instagram and Facebook and YouTube, what we saw was a ton of 18-year-old versions of ourselves.
Sure.
A ton of smart, ambitious, young, good-looking, fit people that are trying to find their way in life and have got a lot of attention and are helping other people, but still they have a long way to go on their own journey of learning about their own insecurities. So we knew, and we knew this so much that we actually went out and trademarked the word "stay authentic" for t-shirts, right? Because we knew that authenticity would be the future of what people would be saying in our space right now. And it's become very popular and trendy now.
Sure.
It wasn't 5-6 years ago and plus, it was not. It wasn't very popular. It was put your best foot forward, show everybody your amazing life and only do that. And we still see a lot of examples of that. The pendulum is starting to swing. And we knew that it would have to swing eventually. And so we just were one of the first to come out and be that way, to just put everything out there, be vulnerable, admit all of our faults, admit our insecurities, admit the place that we've come from, and try and help everybody from that place versus a "I know better, I'm smarter, I'm experienced" space. It's more of "I understand, you know, I too have felt this, gone through this, done that." Like, and so that was kind of I really think that is a major reason, because we weren't talented at all when we first started this, was why we were so successful. It is so rare to find 3 macho alpha buff dudes that are open enough to share their insecurities,
sure,
and their faults and be vulnerable in the fitness space. I mean, it's a very macho, look at me, I'm jacked, putting, you know, to the point where so many of these fitness influencers, you know, they take a photo shoot in a month's time of their best shape of their life. And then they use those photos all year long to put on this facade that they carry themselves at like 5 or 6% body fat year round. And that's crazy. It's crazy to do that. It's unhealthy to do that. And we saw this opportunity to just be very open and transparent and vulnerable with our audience. And I really believe that's a big reason why it grew to where it did.
I'm glad you touched on that, because authentic is a piece that both of us share, whether you're coming in from a very serious chronic pain injury, or you're looking to just get your life back on track with fitness, because quite honestly, you look in the mirror and you're like, I don't even think I can fit that dress anymore on my side. So one of the things is chiropractors we see often come in our office is they're in serious chronic pain because they've let it go for so long. And now they're looking for that quick fix. Adam, you and I share that same moment of this, there's no quick fix here. And we need to have that authentic reality check too. We're not going to be using the 5% body fat picture all year long. I'm going to see you, get you walking better, get your biomechanics stronger, take you slowly out of pain. Sometimes we do have miracles. You know, they get the adjustment and they're like, this is amazing. But most people don't lose 25 pounds in a month, right? And if they do, they're probably doing something extreme. So we want to take the listener on a journey with us. And Adam, that's why it's so important that your message is out there, because we resonate so well with you. I want to ask you, in your career right now, what actually is your favorite part of doing what you're doing?
You know, out of all of us, I'm more, and maybe Doug too. Doug and I are a lot. I like building businesses. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people overcomplicate it. I think it's actually much simpler than what you think. Although, and I'm not downplaying how hard it is to scale a company. It's extremely hard. Most people fail, but it's really about finding a place where you can add value into somebody else's life, and then always going back to that and asking yourself, like, "Am I adding enough value? Am I adding enough value?" And just, I love that. I love constantly reevaluating where our business is at currently and asking myself, are there areas that we can add more value? And what I've found in previous businesses that I've done is that when you do that, like, the money comes. But if you work the other way, where you're trying to figure out how to make more money all the time, that's a fleeting business plan. Like, it may work initially to drive a little bit of revenue, mm-hmm. but many times that will fall out from underneath you and you'll have a really hard time running at it all the time with that versus always looking inside the business and trying to find ways to continually to add value to it. And that has been a lot of the success of the scaling of the company. So I like that. I actually, more than even the fitness stuff. So, you know, being completely transparent, when I was a trainer in my early 20s, I actually was promoted pretty early into leadership and training trainers. And I actually found that I had more of a passion for that than I even had helping the individual. I loved impacting other leaders that were going to go out and impact other people's lives. I felt, one, I was making a larger impact that way. I enjoyed working with that mindset of people. Like, I really liked leadership. And so that's what I love still today. Like, I actually love all the stuff that most people don't know about a Mind Pump, all the back end stuff, all the behind.
Jumping into that, because Mind Pump is a big part of who you are. I think you live it authentically and transparently every day. It's being able to get the message out. And you're clearly a leader with the podcast that you have out there and how many people that follow you and know that you're not just doing this as a job. You're doing this as a lifestyle. It's a journey. I'm being honest with you. I'm not perfect. The one part that I wanted to ask you is, since you did resonate with leadership, who were some of the people that maybe inspired you? Since you love the leadership aspect, can you tell me a little bit about who inspired you on your journey?
Yeah, well, first, it actually came from an interesting place, a very pivotal moment in my career, actually. I was about 6 or 7 years into working for 24 Hour Fitness, and I told you before that I'd won several trophies for being the best at what I did, all the clubs that I had worked at. So at that point in my career, I'd already managed 3 of the largest clubs in the Bay Area revenue-wise. I'd broke records in all of them. And I still wasn't promoted to the district level. And this really bothered me. This was still a time in my life, my early 20s, where, you know, something like this had happened to me. And I came from a very victim role. Like, I just, you know, this company is not promoting me. I can't believe this. And it really, really bothered me. And it kept me stagnant for a while. And I remember just kind of like having this epiphany one day. I think I was just fed up with, like, if I can't sit here and complain about my situation, I either need to get out of this company and go work for somewhere else, or I need to do something about my situation. And the thing that I realized at that moment was, I'm sitting here frustrated that I'm not a DM or a VP, and I'm allowing a bunch of order takers in the hierarchy of this company to dictate my personal growth. What the hell am I doing? What a name, the M or the G or the V in front of my name tag, like, that matters. Like, where I'm at in my personal growth, like how smart I can be. What's to stop me from being as intelligent as the CEO? Like, I need to wait till I get to that position before I become that intelligent? Why would I not start becoming that intelligent right now? And begin that journey. And so this is really when I began to really read. Like, I read as little as possible to get me by in school, and what I needed to do for my profession and certifications and things like that. Was never a big reader. But this is when I began to, and the reason why I did it was because at that time the CEO was putting out a book every month. He would say, this is what he's reading. So I said, okay, this is a perfect place to start.
Yeah.
All right. If I think I could be, I'm going to read everything the CEO is reading. And see if I can level myself up personal growth. And I'm not going to let this name tag and promotion thing dictate my growth. So I began on this path, and I started with his books. And then about, I don't know, book 3 or 4, I found John C. Maxwell. And John C. Maxwell was a complete game changer author for me. For somebody who doesn't do really well, like, with their attention span and being able to sit down and read a lot of books, the way he writes in short stories, was amazing for me. So I found him, and I loved leadership, right? So I was interested in the subject of leadership, mm-hmm. Because it applied to what I was doing currently at the time. So I was already kind of thirsty for that information, and the way he presented it, was probably the best anybody could present it to me. And I just went on this, I read like almost every, and John C. Maxwell, I don't know how many books he has. He probably has 50 books or more. I probably read 25 of his books, one after another, until finally I felt like, okay, I can literally, you know, guess what he's going to write in the next book because I've read all of his information. So he was a major game changer for me, was the information that he was providing in leadership. And the very first one that I read was Developing the Leader Within. And that one like set me off. And like the first rule in leadership that I share a lot with people is that everything is my fault. Everything is your fault as a leader. And complete ownership. And so I began to look at my staff, our performance, everything that was going on. I never again looked at like an individual or a staff member or an outside thing that was going on. I always looked back on myself on, okay, that's the it is what it is. I can't change those circumstances. It's happened. What do I own in this situation? What could have I done differently before to have avoided this situation? What can I do now to change the situation? That way of thinking, it changed who I was as a leader completely. And I began heading down that path. And then probably the next real pivotal thing for me was a simple read. This is a day read. It's called 1 Minute Manager. I think everybody in a leadership position should read this book. It absolutely blew my mind. And it's probably just because when it happened in my career or whatever. But the short version or the premise of this book is that instead of as a leader always pointing out all the things that your staff is not doing correctly and correcting them and helping them and fixing them and showing them what to do, which is kind of how most managers and leaders are taught initially.
Right.
As a boss, I'm taught the right way of doing everything. And if my staff isn't up to par, my job as a boss is to get them up to par. Then the natural thing that you would think to do is to correct them, show them the right way. And how your approach is on that would probably dictate how successful you are originally. And I was pretty good at delivering that message early, so I had a little bit of success. What changed everything for me and took me to a whole nother level was when I actually stopped focusing on any of the things that my staff was doing wrong or not doing right. Mm-hmm. And I began to focus 100% all of my attention on everything that I saw them doing well and right. And because I'm not an organized person, I did this where I, so at the time I think I was leading about 20 something people or so. And I said, okay, I'm not organized. I don't have an assistant at this point in my life. I need to put in a system to put to practice what I just learned in this book so I can measure it and see if it really makes a difference. And so what I did was I put all my trainers' names in my back. This is dating myself. So this is back in the Palm Trio days. So my Palm Trio, right? This is well before iPhones and shit, right? So I get in my Palm Trio and I set all my trainers' names with an alarm. And so I would have an alarm go off on Tuesday at 2 o'clock and it would say Sherry, and it would ping me. And then what I would know and what I would do is I would stop whatever it was I was doing. No matter what I was doing, I would stop. I would go find you wherever you were in the gym. And then I would make a point to point out something I saw you do that I appreciated, I liked, or that I thought you were doing really well. That could be as simply as I saw the way you greeted your client at that hour. You know, I saw you, client walked in, the way you were with them. I would find something that I could point out. Then I'd walk over to you, normally put my hand on your shoulder and say, hey, Sherry, I just want to let you know that I saw the way that you approached your client today. And I just really appreciate the work that you do in here and that you're making a difference. And then I'd walk away. That's it. And that's what 1 Minute Manager is all about, is finding all those 1 minutes that you can in a day to point that out in your staff. Now, I had to, in order to measure this, like, is this really making an impact or is this thing that Adam's talking about just a bunch of BS? When it like really like blew my mind was about a month and a half later of like consistently doing this. I'm sitting in my office and in walks a trainer. Trainer walks in. I'll never forget. This is Anthony, one of my really good trainers. And he walked in and he just starts vomiting all this information to me about what he's not doing. I'm not doing this. I'm so sorry, Adam. I've got finals in school right now and this is going on. And he's like, give me all these excuses. And then he's telling me what he's going to do. And he promised to get all this done. And I'm thinking to myself, what in the hell? Like, where is this all coming from? What I realize is I had missed his walking, like my little reminder to go over and tell him what a good job he's doing. So like 7 days had elapsed since I had come over and pointed out something I was very proud of him doing. And he felt the need to come over and tell me everything that he was doing wrong and how he was going to correct it, which then opened the door for me to coach and train up. And it's very different when somebody comes to you and says, I need help, or I'm doing something wrong, or
admitting something, and then you have the ability as the leader to then coach up, versus me walking over to you and saying, Sherry, you're doing this wrong. You need to be doing this way. The way you receive that is completely different. And just by me making a point to always pointing out these things that my staff was doing so well, trained them so well that they expected that from me, that they assumed that if they didn't get that from me, they must have been doing something terribly wrong that they needed to admit to me. And I was like, I mean, it blew my mind how powerful this was. And then I've learned to sharpen that skill and get better and better. And what I've found, this is now fast forwarding 8-9 years into my career, I was twice as successful with 50% of the effort and the work that I was putting in. At my early career, I was a speed of the leader guy, you know, run with me or get ran over. All I need is one or two people to see it my way, and we will crush goal and we'll figure it out. And, you know, what, and that was just like this vicious cycle. But I was young, I had success in it. Later on in my career, focused on this way of leading, I worked way less. It was so much easier. I was so much more productive. The team was way more successful. And I was like, wow, so that was a game changer for me in leadership, both those things.
Adam, that is an amazing story of really your own personal growth and how it impacts the people around you. And very much understand, chiropractors will have a patient at the front desk. They'll go through the examination. They'll recognize one thing, that the patient can either be a part of the problem or be the problem. And what that means is they need to coach them, that to them to get better, they need to be willing to participate. And as you started to do the 1 minute manager and started encouraging them, some of the worst and most difficult chronic pain injuries that come in are the victim mentality. It's like, you fix it. And we have to change that around. We have to make them part of the solution. We're your coaches to help you be the very best you can be. It also reminded me of one of my favorite mentors who said, Sherry, the person you will become are the books you read and the people you meet. And I have to say, Adam, you are one of those icons in the fitness industry that goes beyond the fitness industry. It's being able to meet the patient or the client where they're at. It's building a business, helping people be and see the opportunities that are ahead of them. And sometimes they come from very humble beginnings and they are victims and they don't even recognize that they are. And we have to change that mindset of where they are. So I want to congratulate you. You've been an absolutely phenomenal guest on today's podcast. And we're hoping that you'll come back and join us because you're full of energy, inspiration, and excitement. For all of those out there, if this is the first time that you've heard Adam Schaefer, we are blessed to have him. This is the Adjusted Reality Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today, Adam.
Thank you.
I want to thank all of you for tuning in for today's podcast. It was absolutely delightful to have Adam Schaefer work with us about the fitness and good health. Now, this podcast was brought to you by the Foundation for Chiropractic Progress. Don't forget to subscribe, share the podcast with your friends, rate and review. And if you're feeling so inspired to learn more about chiropractic or find a doctor of chiropractic near you, please do visit us at f4cp.org/find a doctor. That's f4cp.org/find a doctor. We appreciate your support and look forward to checking in with you again soon. I'm Dr. Sherry McAllister with the Adjusted Reality Podcast.